Members, I'm calling the meeting to order unofficially yet. Or do we have a quorum? I think we're still one short. Do we have a quorum? I'll call the meeting to order officially. This is great. Members, just a little word about the future. Today is going to be rather interesting because it turns out that the Senate author and I introduced the incorrect version of the charter school provisions. It's more or less a reviser bill. Well, it is a reviser bill. So you have before you a delete all. So we will have Ms. Larson walk through that later in the meeting this morning and not act on it till next Tuesday. And because 2778 wasn't posted in time for rightful notice, we'll also walk through that and act on it next Tuesday. And that next Tuesday, plan, you know, on meeting here at 8:15. We'll be back from our break and continuing that afternoon after session, 20 minutes after session adjourns or at 5 o'clock, but it will probably be 20 minutes after session adjourns, and we will finish our work. Then you should have available to you a copy of our omnibus bill Wednesday, and then we'll walk through it. Well, you will have you'll probably have it before then, Ms. Larson. Yes, she's assuring me that it'll be ready. And then Thursday will be the walkthrough, and Friday amending and sending it out of here. So we have lots of work ahead of us, and Tuesday will be a very busy day as we finish hearing some bills that have not yet been heard or been referred to us. So with that, members, on the minutes, we found, thanks to Representative Yaruso, that there were some technical changes that needed to be made in the May 17 minutes. I'm getting ahead of myself. March 17, I probably wish it were May 17. I feel a little tired today. So, Representative Whalen, will you look over the minutes carefully, and everyone else too? We just had some apostrophes, and I don't know why I didn't catch them. Ooh. It was just a little technical change, but we don't want to have a group with an apostrophe in it if they don't call themselves with an apostrophe. So that was one of the changes. Representative Wayland, would you move approval?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Wayland moves approval of the March 17, 2016 minutes because of technical corrections. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes for the technical corrections of the March 17 minutes are approved. March 22, Representative Yaruso, will you look those over, please? And I'm going to wait. Everyone, let's pay attention.
Madam Chair, as far as I can see, they look great, so I move we approve the minutes.
Representative Yaruso moves approval of the March 22 minutes. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. And Representative Barrett, welcome to our committee. Representative Barrett, I will move House File 2511 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And you have an amendment. Members,
indeed.
This is the A16-0830 amendment so that he can have the bill in the order in which he wants to present it. All those in favor of the A16-0830 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the A16-0830 amendment is adopted. Welcome, Representative Barrett, and please explain House File 2511 as amended.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. What I'd like to do is just go over how this bill came to us today, and then I'll turn it over to Eugene Piccolo to describe the details of the bill. But I represent Chisago, most of Chisago County, in which we have a few public schools and also one charter school, Trio Wolf Creek Online High School. They currently serve 9 through 12. It's an online high school, although there is an option to come in and take classes through the school. it's a little unique, and I think a lot of charter schools are unique because they all serve a particular purpose. This one serves the purpose of kids who, through whatever reason, the typical high school situation just doesn't work for them. In going to a few graduations as I have, the stories that they share at graduation are pretty compelling regarding some struggles that they've been through, either male or female, and the fact that this online high school is there to serve the particular needs that they have. Just read you a couple quotes from a couple students that you can find on their website. The best thing about Wolf Creek Distance Learning Charter School is that you got to work from home. I work a lot better at home. It's not as distracting as working at school with lots of other people around. It's funny they mention that because a friend of mine had a child who was struggling in school, and he said to his mom, there's so many distractions at school. And that's true for a lot of kids, I think, who just deal with certain things in life that make it easier to get distracted. Another quote from a student is, the best thing about Wolf Creek Charter School is that it is a good alternative for students who like more of a one-on-one interaction instead of being in a class of 30. So with that as a background, some folks in my district came to me and said, Bob, some of the hoops we have to jump through to become an authorizer or to renew our authorization are duplicative, and so we'd like to see if we can make some changes to that. What's unique about my situation is the public school is actually the authorizer. So, and they did that because they see the needs of these kids, and even though these kids would, I think, technically be leaving their school district, they feel a compelling need to help provide the education that would be most beneficial to those children. So they got me interested last fall, and we met and decided that there were some things that maybe we can improve. And so with that as a background, I'd like to turn it over to Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Charter Association of Charter Schools.
Welcome, Mr. Piccolo. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. The bill does several things. First, if you look on lines 2.5 through 2.8, basically it says that if you are a school district who is an authorizer, that you can, through a series of assurances to the department, demonstrate that you have the competency to oversee public schools, rather than have to go through a whole series of processes and so forth to demonstrate that you have the capacity to be an authorizer as a public school district. And so it simplifies that process and recognizes that public school districts do oversee public schools, and why should they have to go through extra hoops? Because if they can't oversee public schools, they probably shouldn't be a district in the first place. So that's what that piece does. Part of the if you look on the amendment, lines 1 through 3, 1-3 through 1-10, basically just clarifies a little about the capacity of what authorizers have to do, and that the information about individuals that the authorizer hires are not part of the evaluation. It's whether the capacity of the authorizer exists rather than individuals. Then lines 113 through 116 basically says there would be a review of the performance process of reviewing authorizers after every cycle. Every 5 years, authorizers have to be reviewed. And so there'd be review of that process to make sure that it is up to date and really is doing what it's supposed to. And then the last part, 17 through 122, basically says that the department needs to use the data that already exists when it comes to reviewing authorizers' performance, and that they cannot penalize authorizers if there's certain they can't take points away, withhold points, otherwise penalized for not chartering additional schools, for not doing expansions of schools and so forth, which is become an issue. Basically, the idea is that we want authorizers to improve their performance, not to be focused on sanctions, that we need to help build the capacity of authorizers rather than just penalizing people.
Madam Chair, I do have two other testifiers.
Yes, please.
And so next up,
Mr. Piccolo, before you leave the table, are there any questions for Mr. Piccolo at this point? Seeing none, let's bring you forth your testifiers. Thank you. Welcome, sir, to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Yes, my name is Dr. Chris Richardson. I'm superintendent of the Northfield Public Schools, completing my 35th year as a school superintendent. I've also been the Minnesota School Superintendent of the Year and also the winner of the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Polaris Award. I'm really speaking today in strong support of House File 2511. Our district is currently one of only three public school districts who are continuing to serve as charter schools. There was a significantly larger number than that at one time, but that has really diminished. We're currently supporting two charter schools in the Northfield area. I've done that since 2002, acted as a sponsor through 2010, and then are currently authorizing Prairie Creek Community School and Arcadia Charter Schools, both located in Northfield. I think over the years we've seen a significant increase in the requirements to maintain our status as an approved authorizer. We initially were granted authorizer status back in 2010 after serving as a charter school sponsor since 2002. The authorizer application process requires very detailed documentation of our experience in supporting and overseeing charter schools, as well as a massive and detailed submission of materials demonstrating every element of how we would provide oversight. Many other school districts and sponsors have determined over the years that the authorizer requirements and paperwork were so onerous that they chose to withdraw, forcing a number of charter schools to scramble to try to find new authorizers. During the 2015-16 year alone, six authorizers have notified MDE that they're withdrawing from authorizing charter schools, and MDE is currently advertising to try to find new charter schools authorizers to take on those duties. We're currently in the process of trying to renew our charter school authorizer approval for the next 5 years. Our two charter schools have done very well academically. They've maintained a strong financial position, and they're very satisfied with our support and oversight. The renewal process, however, has been extremely difficult and time-consuming. Answering all the components of the process has required an inordinate amount of the district's time and resources and resulted in the submission of over 1,000 pages of documentation. At this point, we're still not granted approval and are currently being asked to provide more data and documentation and a corrective action plan. We believe that as school districts, we're uniquely qualified to support charter schools. We have highly trained staff who have completed all the state mandates for administrative licensure and ongoing professional development. We are required every 5 years to complete 125 credit hours of professional development. Our administrative team has over 75 years of combined experience in performing the duties of charter schools may need help in, such as curriculum, instruction, human resources, school operation, maintenance, finance, payroll, assessment, discipline. We strongly support the concept that school districts should be part of the authorizer mix and should be able, through a submission of just a statement of assurances, satisfy the requirements of demonstrated capacity to be an authorizer, including staff qualifications, professional development evaluation, time commitment, as well as financial resources, as well as compliance to mission and avoidance of conflict of interest, all of which are things that school districts have to do every single day. We believe that the proposed modifications would also ensure that the documentation that's already available to the Department of Education should be used to reduce the duplication. As Mr. Piccolo had already indicated, we have found in some cases being required and given actually handouts by the department telling us to go to their site, get this information, and then put it onto our form so that we can send it in. And again, the question is, why should we be doing that when that documentation is already available at the department? Further, I think it would prohibit the department from reducing the authorizer's renewal score because it added additional charter schools. In our case, and Chisago Lakes both, we really have no interest of going outside of our school district boundaries, but we have a strong commitment to provide school choice in our school district. Right now, you can't get the most points if you haven't actually added the schools or added the number of sites or added the number of grade levels and so on. And also, if you haven't had any complaints against your charter schools, you actually can't get the most number of points. I would ask your support in helping school districts and other authorizers who are willing to provide quality oversight to their portfolio charter schools and choice for districts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Richardson, and thank you for your commitment to authorize a charter. That's a really great relationship when you can have the regular public and the charter linked. I appreciate that very much. Representative Seltzer, your question is for Dr. Richardson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's just really a comment. It's a comment of support for this bill. Thank you, Representative Barrett, for bringing this bill forward, and Dr. Richardson for outlining all the onerous requirements on a high-performing school district. I was on a school board, and we had a great school district, and we were a sponsor, and as the requirements mounted, you know, the time, the staff time, the dollars that you divert to that, we stopped doing it. And so thank you for continuing to do it, and I would strongly support this streamlining. It's just common sense.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Dr. Richardson,
yes.
Do you want to remark that, comment to that?
Yes, Representative and members of the committee and Madam Chair. We are having the same discussions right now with our board, who's saying we know how much time you're spending doing these pieces. We know how much time you are putting into going through the process, not only of renewal, but also an annual report that we have to provide each year to the department, sharing what we've been doing with our charter schools. And again, I think our frustration is not the frustration about is not a frustration in terms of doing the things that are appropriate for us to report, like what does the new contract look like, what has been the evaluation of the charter over the last 5 years, but questions about do you have the capacity to support your charter schools program. When the charter schools that I work with routinely are calling me and saying, I've never run into this issue as a charter school about this particular discipline piece or this particular financial issue. Well, with 75 years of experience between myself and the other administrators in our district, there really isn't anything we haven't run into. And it's extremely frustrating to have to come back and try to put into a document or a narrative a description of what that capacity is when we know it's already there. Thank you.
Representative Barrett, you have other testifiers. Thank you very much,
yes,
Dr. Richardson.
You. Yes, I do. Heidi Miller, Director of Business Services for Chisago Lake Schools.
And
as she comes up to the testifying table, let me give you just a half a minute about Heidi Miller. I've known her for about 10 years now. I served now for 5 years as a state rep, and before then I was on the Chisago Lake School District community finance team. And I know of no one, honestly, who has the unique ability to understand the needs of the student and also the resources available and tying them together in the most effective way for the students' needs. And I mean that sincerely.
Thank you.
Welcome, Ms. Miller. Please say your name for the record.
Heidi Miller. I'm the Director of Business Services at Chisago Lake Schools, and I have over 36 years of experience as a school district business manager in Pine City and Chisago Lakes. I also serve as the past president of the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials and have been on their board for the last 6 years also. So thank you to Representative Barrett and Madam Chair and members of the committee. Chisago Lakes only authorizes one charter school, and that is Trio Wolf Creek. We previously authorized another charter school, Summit School for the Arts, which unfortunately we had to close down because it didn't follow the guidelines that were necessary by the state or by the school district. And that was that was done in the early 2001-2003 school year. So Trio we've been authorizing Trio since 2002, sponsoring them first, of course, and then authorizing them in 2009. And we feel, again, as Dr. Richardson said, we have the expertise to do the work. We are a public school district. We've been working with public school districts, and we assist Trio in every way. As Dr. Richardson stated, I receive calls from the executive director at Trio, Tracy Kornstrom, all the time, discussing issues with, you know, student discipline, with finances. Trio Wolf Creek is very lucky in that they actually have quite a significant fund balance. And so previously, in previous years, when, you know, funds were withheld from charter schools and they had to borrow money at a very expensive rate, TRIO did not have to do that because they had the funds available. So it is becoming, as you stated, Representative Seltzer, it's becoming very difficult for a public school district to be an authorizer because there is an enormous amount of paperwork. Not that we shouldn't be, you know, evaluated and self-evaluate and make sure that we are doing the proper job for them, but just some of the requirements on, you know, what our requirements are and what our credentials are have been very hard to prove. And the fact that we don't have any complaints on our charter school, that should not be a negative or a ding against us. You know, we just don't have any. There haven't been any filed. And, you know, we believe that if one student graduates from TRIO, then it's a success because it's one more student that has graduated. And true, TRIO's performance, you know, has not been stellar, but they have been looking at students where if they started with them in ninth grade, they are graduating on time and they are graduating early. Unfortunately, a number of students come to charter schools at their very last opportunity and they are not successful. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Any questions for our testifier? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And thank you for your work. I can't even imagine what the workload is when you have double what you expect. MDE, the department, please come forward and testify to this bill. Welcome, Assistant Commissioner. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Education. Just wanted to make a few comments on this bill. First off, I do want to thank Representative Barrett for bringing this forward. We appreciate Ms. Miller and Dr. Richardson's comments that they brought forward as well. From the department perspective, we're committed to continue streamlining this authorizing evaluation system, and it's something that we have done and we will continue to do so. I just wanted to provide a little bit of background overall on what we're discussing here. And in 2009, the legislature did pass significant legislation that changed how charter schools were overseen. It provided more, the language in statute provided more authority as sponsors shifted to authorizers. With that came more responsibility. It also passed a role for the Department of Education to develop an authorizer evaluation system. That's something that we took very seriously. We spent years developing the system, and we developed that system with input from stakeholders. It wasn't something that we necessarily needed to do per statute, but it was something we felt was necessary in order to build something that no other state was doing. We were the first in the nation building an evaluation system. We didn't have a model to work off of. So over that time, over the time of building this evaluation system, we have engaged authorizers and charter school stakeholders every step of the way. Just between January of 14 and 15, we have 14 stakeholder engagement sessions. This helped in developing the authorizer evaluation system. It also helped in developing the rubric for how which authorizers would be evaluated. So again, this has been a very open and public process. We have made several changes, not only to the system and to the rubric, based on feedback from authorizers. We have made substantial changes, and right now we are in the middle of evaluating authorizers, whether they're nonprofit authorizers or they're the districts that you had just heard from. We have four rounds, what we call four cohorts, of evaluations. Chisago Lakes and Northfield were part of the second evaluation. During our first evaluation, we had our authorizers were not district authorizers that did not meet satisfactory on demonstrating how they would meet the requirements that they put forth in their own approved authorizing contract. And they actually had worked with the department in order to, they had worked within their own authorizer area with their schools to make the specific changes to demonstrate that they were meeting the goals that they specified in their contract. We also have hired a third-party vendor to actually perform the evaluation. This is something that our charter school staff works diligently with the specific authorizers and the third-party vendor. This way, we wanted to make sure that there was a valid review, that there was no way, shape, or form that it could be perceived that MDE was weighing in one way or the other. We also provide a process when authorizers do not agree with the findings of the evaluation to have an informal hearing process. This is something that we do in our in other areas of MDE as well. When there are specific complaints in compliance and monitoring, if there have been issues in food and nutrition, there is a there are hearing processes where if a district, individual, or school feels that they disagree with findings, that they are able to have a hearing in front of our deputy commissioner. We continue to be actively engaged in continuous improvement. As I indicated, we have four cohorts of evaluations. We have our goal, and this is something I've shared with Representative Barrett, is that we don't want to substantially change the rules of this evaluation. We don't want to substantially change the rubric of this evaluation that would make it unfair between the first cohort and the fourth cohort. We have made changes between cohorts based on feedbacks from authorizers and from charter schools that didn't jeopardize the evaluation, but we are committed to the continuous improvement. We have looked, we've already contacted the Department of Administration in terms of a lean or Kaizen process, specifically to review how, as an agency or how as an evaluation, we can streamline paperwork. I think the example given by Ms. Miller and Dr. Richardson, we think that's valid, and we are looking for ways. We have some proposals already in terms of once an authorizer goes through the evaluation, their authorizing plan, the paperwork that they use to demonstrate how they met their specific goals is significantly reduced, but we're committed to seeing what we can do to reduce that also in the future. In terms of the data provided to authorizers, that's something that we already have made a step forward. If you look in our MDE reports, when you look at how school districts or schools perform, it's everything's based on the school district number. We've created a separate page for authorizers that allow authorizers to have their entire portfolio of data in one specific spot. I did want to also comment on the authorizer versus school district roles and responsibilities. I just want to remind, I think there's been some fantastic comments here, but a school district does oversee its schools. It may determine curriculum, programs, teaching support, staff, etc. And as an authorizer, they must maintain the school autonomy per Minnesota Statutes 124E03 Subdivision 1. An authorizer is to have a clear policy to ensure school autonomy of that specific charter school. The policy establishes and recognizes the school's authority over academic, operational, and financial needs, and respects the school authority over day-to-day operations. It is a charter school board's duty to decide and be responsible for policy matters related to the operation of the school, and to decide matters related to budgeting, curriculum, programming, personnel, and operating procedures. Two critical aspects of an authorizer's oversight work are established in the initial performance contract with the charter school, and deciding, and then the decision is if they decide to renew or update. Authorizers, including Northfield and Chisago Lakes, they're evaluated on how they hold the charter school board accountable, not the specific day-to-day operations. I did want to also comment on some of the testimony to clarify a couple of pieces, and I also did bring an individual, Paula Higgins, who is a charter school specialist that works on our evaluation and has worked with both of the school districts. But there are a couple of points that were raised that we feel that we would continue to work on, but we do want to clarify. In terms of the complaints, the charter authorizers are not penalized in any way for in this evaluation for receiving or not receiving complaints. What is stated in the contract is that there's a clear, transparent process for addressing the complaints. And that's what we're getting at in terms of the complaint issue. We don't reduce scores for not expanding or not replicating. We do offer areas. Obviously, the charter school law is about sharing best practices. We do offer, there are ways to exceed and get more, or perform better by sharing those best practices, but authorizers are not penalized in that. I know the amendment brought forward did do some, clarified a few areas. In specific, the amendment on line 1.13 through 1.16, we're absolutely committed to this. Whether it's in legislation or not, again, I mentioned we've talked about what we're doing for a lean process. We've reached out to the National Charter School Authorizers Organization to participate in that. In terms of paragraph C, I think I've given an example of where we do already try to eliminate duplicate reporting, but that's something that we are committed to continue to do. And if that needs to be in legislation, we'll definitely continue to do that. As for the rest, I think the complaint process, I wanted to clarify that it's not about the complaints, it's about having a clear, transparent process. Just as at the department, we have to have a clear and transparent process for all the complaints that we receive regarding charter schools. And so with that, I just wanted to put a little bit on the record. If you all would like specific details, I did bring Ms. Higgins along well to get into those. But I do want to share with you, as I shared with Representative, that we are committed to continuous improvement to the superintendent and Ms. Miller. Obviously, we're committed to continuous improvement as well. The legislature, the committee, we hope that you do hold us accountable on this system. We'll continue to improve. Again, we built this model. We're the first in the nation that have done this. We have seen other states that have had significant problems with their evaluation. I think that we can continue to work in terms of streamlining the paperwork and make it easier, not just on districts, but on all authorizers. So with that, I want to thank you for having the time to...
So, Mr. McHenry, you referred to lines 1.13 through 1.16. Is it just that sentence that you're fully in support of? And is there some concern about then the next sentence that begins on line 1.16 and ends on 1.110? Would you clarify that, please?
Madam Chair, members, I'm sorry. I think I may. Let me make sure I have the right. 1.13 through 1.16 was
of the amendment.
The amendment is what we referred to as something that we're already committed to doing. So I just wanted to make sure this was part of our discussion.
Thank you.
That we will continue to do. In terms of the language on 1.17 through 1.22, I think that's something that we're open to continue to work on. We feel like some of this we already are doing, and we'll continue to work with the author, with the districts, and with authorizers on this as well. I think the one issue that we have, I think the districts have provided some great information on how it impacts the districts. I think the concern that we had was actually in the bigger concern we had in the bill was specifically line 2.5 through 2.8, where essentially what this would do would have a different evaluation system for districts that choose to authorize than for charter school authorizers. If that's something that the legislature deems we should be doing, obviously, we are going to take the lead from you on that. We have been, again, what we wanted to share with you is that we have been consistent with all authorizers. We have had authorizer participation, including the districts, in terms of building this. And we're committed to continue working on this to make this better for all authorizers, including districts. But we do have a concern that this could create two different type evaluation systems per authorizers.
So, Mr. McHenry, the fact that it's permissive in line 2.5 of the bill, is that what's concerning to you, that
some might and some might do something different. Is that concerning in regard to submitting the statement of assurances?
And Madam Chair, members, again, this would make it possible that it would be inconsistent with evaluations across different types of authorizers. And that being said, we did indicate that we're committed to an overall review of how this system is working once we get through all of the evaluations. And part of that may entail something different for districts. It depends on the input that I think that we would receive. But that's something that we're definitely interested in a full-scale review once we've gone through all four cohorts of evaluations.
So I'd like to call Ms. Higgins to the testifying table. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Welcome, Ms. Higgins. Please say your name for the record and explain what your role is at the department and if you have any comment about the amendment before us to the bill.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Paula Higgins. I'm a Charter Center Specialist at the Minnesota Department of Education. My role is to work directly with authorizers. We take care of reviewing new school affidavits, change in authorizer requests, supplemental affidavits for grade site expansion, and we work with the authorizers through the Minnesota Authorizer Performance Evaluation System, which we refer to as MAPES.
Are there any questions for Ms. Higgins? Representative Dabney.
Well, this may be for Ms. Higgins, maybe for the author, but I'm a little uncertain what the language on, excuse me, now I've lost track of it. There's reference in the amendment.
Yes.
On page 1, line 14, that authorizers' performance must be based on Minnesota criteria. What is that referring to? I assume if MDE is using certain criteria that it becomes Minnesota criteria because it's the Minnesota Department of Education. So what are you including, what are you excluding by a reference to Minnesota criteria?
Representative Barrett, I think that's a question for the author.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Ms. Higgins, you may want to comment on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Dabney. You know, I'm going to have to phone a friend regarding the specifics of this. I know Mr. Piccolo and I met after the original bill, and he had ways to improve the bill, and I think if Mr. Mm-hmm. Piccolo would come up, I think he would be able to answer that question more.
Well, before he does, Ms. Higgins, is there any other criteria that you use from another state or another agency, Ms. Higgins?
When the system was developed, we had worked with Ohio. Ohio was in the process of developing their authorizer performance evaluation system. And then we worked closely with NACSA, who is the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. They have their principles and standards for quality authorizing that they publish. And so we worked with both of those entities as we worked to develop our standards.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Do you let authorizers know what your standards, what the standards are against which their applications will be judged?
Which their evaluation would be judged?
Excuse me, yes.
Yes. We worked with authorizers and held different stakeholder meetings as the system was developed. So the system initially started with developing the rubric, and then as questions started coming up, then we started developing specifications to help clarify the rubric specifically. And so through those different stakeholder meetings, 14 of them, we met with stakeholders as we developed those.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Piccolo? Thank you, Ms. Higgins. I know you're not going to leave us in case there are other questions. Representative Russo. Oh, just a minute. Ms. Higgins? Representative Russo, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is for Ms. Higgins or possibly Mr. McHenry. Different school districts have, you know, they're all subject to the same legal requirements, but they've got different levels of experience with regard to the number of students they have, the number of buildings that they manage, the populations that they serve, local circumstances, and so on. And I assume that's also true for various kinds of authorizers. So how do you take that into account when you're looking at specific authorizers with respect to the scope of the charter that they are authorizing, you know, whether it's a multiple location charter, what sorts of students they're serving, and then even things like whether it's whether their type of school depends heavily on a certain kind of technology or a certain kind of curriculum or something like that. Does that come into evaluating whether a specific authorizer is going to be capable of overseeing the operations of a specific type of charter?
Ms. Higgins, maybe Assistant Commissioner, you should be there too as well. We'll start with Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Urusso, good question. Again, the evaluation system is based on the application and approved authorizing plan that is submitted by the specific authorizer. And so the evaluation is based on how the authorizer demonstrates how the authorizer meets those specific requirements submitted in their approved authorizing plan. So if an authorizer has, let's say, 20 charter schools, what they have submitted for their approved authorizing plan will be different than how an authorizer with, let's say, one or two schools may operate. And so what we are looking for in this evaluation and in this rubric is how the authorizer demonstrates how it meets the needs and capacity that is specified in the individual authorizer evaluation plan that's submitted. Ms. Higgins, I don't know if you want to add any more to clarify, but I think that's how we differentiate between different size authorizers.
Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think that's a yes.
I think so.
So I appreciate the intent of the bill, because as the original testifiers pointed out, you know, that the school districts are already charged with many of the obligations and the capabilities and so on that an authorizer would be. But I think I would like to see there be some language that would allow the department to trigger a further, you know, further criteria if, for example, the expected number of students of the charter school is larger than, I mean, it could have a very small district, and if it's an online charter, it could be a very large number of students potentially. So if there's some sort of mismatch in that, or other similar things, like the heavy use of technology, serving a population of students that the district does not have experience with, types of curriculum the district, you know, and so on. So, and I don't mean it to be excessively, you know, minute in what those criteria might be, but that there could be some kind of broad trigger kind of categories that would justify the department asking for a little bit more in-depth review. And it doesn't have to be a review of the entire capability then, but maybe just that aspect of the proposal. And I'll have more questions for the bill later. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Piccolo, do you want to respond to this? Thank you very much, Mr. McHenry and Ms. Higgins. You'll stay around so you can answer other questions. Mr. Piccolo, you've heard the first issue and now a subsequent question, so yes. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members, on the first issue about Minnesota criteria, the goal there is to make sure that the criteria meet the intent of our law, because our charter school law is very different than most states. In most states, charter schools we would consider magnet schools. They are not independent, they're not autonomous, they are under the jurisdiction of a traditional school district. And so the criteria need to be reflective of our law in Minnesota, and that's the point of that language, to make sure that the criteria fit our situation rather than some other state, or there's some national broad proposals in terms of guidance about evaluation of authorizers that really don't fit Minnesota very well. So the idea there is just to make sure that they fit our law and our scope. In terms of the second issue that Representative Urusso raised, there is a provision in law currently that if there are concerns that are brought to the department about an authorizer's oversight, that the commissioner can do an oversight at any time if there's a issue brought before the commissioner. They do not have to wait for 5 years to do an evaluation.
Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that, although I would still maintain those concerns in the initial authorization so that you don't get the district in over its head with authorizing a charter school that they're really not prepared to be able to cope with. Thank you.
Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Representative DeRusso, I think initially in terms of school districts becoming initial authorizers, I think the process is very extensive in terms of them getting approval to begin with. It's even more rigorous, I think, than the review process because they're looking at everything from scratch. Do they have all the procedures in place, the competencies, the capacities to do the job? So that has not been really a big concern from our perspective or in terms of process. The concern is more about the ongoing review process.
Representative Urso, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm concerned because I got to kind of track here between the bill and the amendment. In the bill, the existing language is on line 1.7, an applicant must include, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. paragraph 8. And then when we look at, and here's where I have to make sure.
Yeah, we're striking lines 10 through 13 and inserting that amendment.
Yes, but I'm not addressing that. I'm looking at page 2. And now I have to make sure I'm looking at the right thing. Lines 2.5 to 2.8, where notwithstanding what I just wrote, an authorizer that is a school district may satisfy those requirements with this statement of assurance. And that's what I'm concerned with, that in the majority of cases, that is likely to be okay with me. But and my concern is that in these cases where you have a charter that goes significantly outside of what the school district currently has built into their organization to deal with, that a statement of assurance might not be adequate assurance. You know, if we've, and so that would be a point at which the department might want to be able, you know, to be able to say, no, just a minute, we need to have more detail on this part of that rather than just saying, yeah, we're good. So that's my concern.
Ms. Higgins?
Well, with Madam Chair and committee, with MAPES, there are 20 different measures that are evaluated. We have a couple measures that look at authorizer capacity, their skill development, professional development. The majority of it is how they authorize. So standards and processes that they have in place for taking on new schools, for working with schools to do site and grade expansions, for working with schools to change authorizers, how they handle interventions, complaints, how they handle their contract renewal process, and what criteria they're going to use to determine if a charter is renewed for a 2-year, a 3-year, a 5-year, or a termination type of contract. And so with MAPES, we look at the processes that they've established, and that's based on what processes they established in their initial application when they applied to be an authorizer. And so as we look at MAPES, we're looking at what processes they established and then how they're implementing those processes and if they're following them and then implementing them across their portfolio of charter schools.
Representative Urso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern isn't in the evaluation after the fact when they already exist. My concern is line 1.7 is about the initial application. And my concern is that line 2.5 says, notwithstanding all of that. The school district can satisfy everything you just described with us on line 2.8, statement of assurance. So notwithstanding everything you just described about how you would evaluate a charter school, which is what the current law is, all of those things that we find on page 1 after line 1.7, that's all of what you just described. Line 2.5 says notwithstanding any of that. And like I said, in the majority of cases, I'm okay with that because that is already what the business of a school is. But every school district has developed their own capability to match the needs of their district, They all have certain needs, but a school district with 20,000 students has different administrative capability than a school district with 200 students. A school district that serves an urban, very diverse population, or a rural, very diverse population for that matter, has developed different capabilities than another district that doesn't have that same population. And a school district that's heavily invested in technology has different capabilities with regard to that than a school district that is, doesn't have broadband in their district and hasn't developed that capability. So it doesn't matter for line 2.5 what you say all of the criteria by which you currently evaluate charters is. Because line 2.5 says, notwithstanding all of that, a district can satisfy it by giving a statement of assurance. And like I said, in the majority of cases, I am not concerned by that. But I think that a district could get in over its head because they may not know what they don't know. Thank you.
Madam Chair, looking at 2.5 through 2.8, the first part says, notwithstanding paragraph A that may satisfy the requirements of paragraph A, clause 1 and 2. Clause 1 and 2 have to do with how chartering school carries out the mission of the organization, which would be how it carries out the mission of a school district. And 2 is the capacity to serve as an authorizer, including the personnel. And then there's some additional language in regard to the amendment that was approved. Any requirement governing conflict of interest, ongoing evaluation, continuing education by submitting a statement of assurance of legal compliance. The intent is that it has to do with the conflict of interest between the charter school
and the district.
Between the authorizer and the charter school, which is specified in another section of the law in terms of, for example, the authorizer cannot be selling services to the school district in which it is the authorizer because it has a conflict of interest in terms of financial interest. And there's already provision in the law about that. So that's what that is referring to. And then the ongoing evaluation, I think maybe where it needs to be clarified, but the continuing education is really about the continuing education of the staff of the authorizer, not of the school.
Representative Urso, does that satisfy you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm satisfied with regard to that part of what so if you look at line 2.6,
yep,
from the second comma on, I'm satisfied. What I'm the most concerned with is parentheses to parentheses, because if we look at the amendment, on line 1.3 begins the description of what that means. Mm-hmm. And it is the capacity of the organization. That's my concern. Whether we do or do not adequately address the capacity of a particular organization for a particular charter. And if it is a typical school district authorizing a typical reasonably traditional charter, which is kind of a contradiction because charters are not meant to be traditional, I wouldn't have a concern. But on line 1.4, we see the qualifications for those positions. And those qualifications will depend on what the nature of that charter is. I mean, what we would need to see in the qualifications for those positions will depend on what the nature of the charter is. The financial resources will depend on the nature of the charter, what's required. And so I would like to see some language added that would allow an escape clause for the department for those cases in which the scope of the charter or the nature of the charter differs significantly from the current capabilities of a district. So it's not that I want to throw the whole thing out, okay, because I really appreciate the intent of this. But it just needs that escape clause in there so that we can belay any concerns. Otherwise, my concern is that a particular charter may go shopping for districts.
Mr. Piccolo.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Russo, I think the in terms of shopping for districts, there's only three districts left in the state that are authorizing. When this all started 25 years ago, the only authorized sponsors were school districts. And as you heard, two of them are looking at whether they should even continue. And so I don't think that's the issue. In terms of shopping, there's a whole process that is required if you want to transfer authorizers. It can only be done at the end of a contract period. It can only be done if it meets certain criteria. The transfer has to be approved by the Department of Education to go to a new authorizer. So there's all kinds of safeguards in the process right now in terms of transfer of authorizers.
Madam Chair, Representative Yersel, my concerns have nothing to do with transfers at all. That's not addressed in this language. My concern, this is about initial applications. So that's my concern. And who the current people are really is irrelevant, because the current people are the current people under the current process. The current districts are those who have chosen to follow the current process. If we change the process, we have the intent of changing the process is to change who the current authorizers are. And so who the current authorizers are is completely irrelevant. This bill wouldn't even exist if what you wanted was for the current authorizers to remain the only list of who the current districts are that participate as authorizers. So that point's irrelevant. The point about transferring authorizers is irrelevant. That's not what my question's about at all. My question is about what the bill addresses in the changes to how school districts become authorizers in the initial application. And if we could stick to that point, I would appreciate it. And all I am asking is not to throw it out, not to drastically change it, just to include some language. Work with MDE on how you could include some not excessively restrictive language for either side, on just to get some kind of comfort language in there so we can make sure that we don't get ourselves into a problem. Because nobody likes to see these charters that fail and close mid-year and kids go home, you know, and all of that. No one wants that. We want to make sure they succeed. So my concerns are just about making sure that if a school district's taking it on, that we have the chance to make sure they're going to be successful.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Yeru. So I did write down your comments. Very well thought out, and we will certainly do that. Thank you.
Mr. Piccolo. Ms. Higgins. Thank you very much. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. The question I was going to ask, Mr. Piccolo answered. I was wondering how many districts are authorizing charters at the present
only
time.
Only three school districts left.
And
and we would like to encourage more of them.
Yeah, well, I think also part of the reason, in my understanding, I'm a co-author on the bill, is, I mean, the authorizing evaluation is really not that old, and there was an exit of districts who were stymied by the process, and I happen to know, because of the charters in the district that I represent and the district that works with them, that it's been a very amenable relationship and a very positive relationship. And I think one of the concerns I have is that we're losing the capacity for that to occur, for districts to have positive relationships with the charters that are in their districts. And having the district be an authorizer, at least, that's not to say it couldn't change with different leadership, but certainly with the leadership that's been there in the past, it's been a very positive relationship. And I think they are struggling with the burden that are placed on them to continue being authorizers, and I think this bill is attempting to address that issue. And so, although when we write laws, we have to think about the future, I think we also have to think about the past as well.
Thank you, Representative Bly. That was well stated. Further questions of the testifiers? Representative Barrett, closing remarks.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Yersel. I was going to suggest you could work on an amendment and work with this group. I would like to include this in the omnibus bill if there is one, and there will be one. So
I have one minor point in my yes. current capacity as punctuation police.
In the amendment, yes.
Yes, ma'am. On considering the colon at the end of line 1.20, I propose an oral amendment to change the two commas in line 1.21 to semicolons.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given my education history as an accounting major, I will defer any comment on this to those that know more than I do about punctuation.
I think, Representative Barrett, we're going to refer to Ms. Larson as we move forward. So thanks for the suggestion, Representative Uresel. We'll not work on oral amendments at this time,
all right.
But we will
thank
fix
you,
this.
I just,
thank you.
I wanted to bring it to your
yes,
attention because I knew you'd like it to be correct.
Yes. Closing comments, Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the dialogue, appreciate the discussion, appreciate the support, actually. And as a, so thank you regarding the bill. Regarding, I used to be on this committee, and I know Representative Erickson, Chair Erickson, you have two staff members sitting next to you. I want to compliment Representative Uresel for many things, including her punctuation police designation, but also her choice of seating. I think in my term, two terms here, one in the minority, one in the majority, I had the distinction of sitting right where you did, and I appreciated the time I spent next to Representative Mariani was very well spent, and I just wanted to point that out publicly.
Thank you, Representative Barrett. With that said, the chair renews for motion that House File 2511, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you very much, testifiers, Dr. Richardson, Ms. Miller, Ms. Higgins, for introducing yourself to us and getting in the line of fire. That's very good. Assistant Commissioner McHenry, we're always glad to have you here. Members, next, we're going to have two bills for which we cannot move, but let's take a look first at House File 2778, which was not posted in due time for us to actually act on it, but I would like to call your attention to the content of the measure, and Ms. Fraser is not in the audience, so really what's happening here is just a modification of language on the report. So the report for the Advisory Committee for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing and the Blind, which we worked on last year, and visually impaired as well, would change from an annual report to a biennial report. Just so you keep that in mind when we bring this bill up on Tuesday. Are there any questions? So it's an alteration of the timeline. Thank you, members. And have that available to you next Tuesday. With that, members, I'll bring up House File 3204, which is the Charter School Technical Corrections Bill. It will end up as part of the Revisors Bill, I believe. But we had a snafu that occurred between the Senate and the House in that after we worked with the Revisor, and they did such a good job, and also worked with Ms. Larson, Senator Weaker and I introduced the wrong file. So there's a delete all in front of you, and I've asked Ms. Larson to walk through the technical corrections that will be made. You know, we recodified the charter school law last year, but before we have a new set of books published, we would like to have the language corrected. And so the Revisor's Office and Ms. Larson and others worked to bring this to a state where we could all agree that this was the best language. So at this point, I'd like Ms. Larson to walk through this. And then next Tuesday, I'll bring the bill up as amended and officially call for action on it. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. The bill that's before you, 3204, as Representative Erickson indicated, is the first draft of two drafts that nonpartisan staff worked on over the course of the interim. The impetus for doing so was a direction by the legislature to the revisor's office to recodify what had been 124D10 and 124D11. As Gene Piccolo indicated, the charter school law has been in existence for 25 years, and until last year was part of one of two sections of law. And in an effort to make the law more accessible, in 2015, the revisor's office created a new chapter in the education code, 124E. So all of the provisions in 124D10 and 124D11 were included in a new chapter of law. The organization proved propitious, but what it also did was point out how layered the language had become, because in the course of 25 years there had been, as you might imagine, many, many amendments. And so what we tried to do was to go through the various sections in the new chapter 124E and try to make the language more accessible to individuals who are subject to the law, including individuals who might be interested in starting charter schools. So what you have here are our suggested changes. They are technical corrections, they are formatting corrections, they are grammatical corrections. We tried our level best not to make any substantive changes, and that in part explains the snafu between the first and the second draft. After the staff finished the first draft and we circulated it not only among the legal staff but the financial staff, we then made the draft available to various legislators, to charter school stakeholders, and to the department. And we received a number of requests to make further additions or to undo what we had done, and I believe we accommodated just about all of them. So the second iteration of the bill is the one that's in the Delete Everything Amendment, and that includes all of the changes that had been subsequently recommended after the staff had prepared the first draft to the best of our ability. And so what I'd like to do, rather than go through this whole bill, because it's very technical in nature, just point out some examples of what we have tried to do. So if you have 3204 in front of you, you'll see on page 2, for example, we try to put definitions in a single section under definitions. And for example, you'll see a definition of related parties. Well, originally that was in a separate subdivision, and we brought it into this particular section on definitions. On page 3, for example, when the revisor reorganized all of these different sections, the reorganization meant that not all the federal, state, and local requirements were in one place, but some number of them were. So we changed, for example, the headnote, which has no force and effect in law, from general to certain so that it would be clear. Also, we tried to make it the law more accessible to users. So if you look on 3.17, there's a reference to Chapter 181. So we wanted to signal to people who might be looking at the law what Chapter 181 is. So it happens to be that Chapter 181 governs requirements for employment. Then on page 5, this is a section on authorizers, and it took three of us about 15 minutes to sort out the requirements for the one of the charter school entities able to be an authorizer. So, for example, if you look on page 5, line 9, there were certain things that this particular authorizer, which is a charitable organization, cannot be. And so rather than kind of sort through the must and must not, we've put all the must not in one place, for example. Then on page 8, there were two definitions of application, so we've tried to clarify it and say what the application must contain for purposes of forming a charter school. On page 11, there there was language about expansion of a charter school. Well, expansion really subsumes two possibilities, either adding grades or adding sites. So in order to be more precise about what expansion was, we restated it in the context of adding grades or sites, for example. Then on page 15, here's an example of grammatical correction. If you look at the headnote on 15.2 and 15.3, it says collaboration between, and we just reduced the words to collaboration. On page 17, which has to do with the charter school contract, on 17.27, there are items that the plan must establish in terms of who is responsible. So what we've got here is parallel construction, notifying, providing, transferring, closing, etc. On page 18, on 18.21, there was a reference to a department, but in almost all cases throughout Chapter 124E, the direction or the actor who is directed to act is the commissioner, not the department, so we struck department and inserted commissioner. On page 19, this was one of my personal pet peeves, there were a lot of passive sentences, and I think it is not helpful if the law fails to identify who is charged with the responsibility established in the law. So here you see, rather than have the law say a contract may be terminated, it now says an authorizer may terminate. Again, on page 21, here's another example where we tried to indicate to people who might be interested in understanding the law on 21.11, there's a reference to section 181.932, and I think even the denizens of the Capitol might not instantly remember what that is. So what we put in there was governing whistleblowers. So rather than try to find what that section is, it's included here. Later on page 21, on line 33, instead of upon formation of, when forming, it's that kind of thing. On page 22, you'll see there are references on 22.7 and again on 22.10 to Chapter 354A and Chapter 353, and we've simply said what those are. On page 23, instead of on 23.14 and 23.15, instead of saying is prohibited from entering, it's more active structure, must not enter. On page 25, you have more examples. We on 25.10, we got struck the reference to Department of Education and inserted commissioner to be consistent. On 25.15 and 25.16, we made it an active sentence, as we did on 25.21 and 25.22. Again, on the bottom of page 25 on 25.32 and 33, we've said what that statutory reference is so people would easily understand it. We have many examples of that on page 26 governing the audit report, so people who are reading through this will know what the various statutory references are. On 26.28, instead of saying each year, it says annually. On 27.18, we just indicated what 20B11 is. In section 13, we reordered the importance of the ideas so that first the direction for charter schools to disseminate information about how to use charter school offerings to targeted groups, among others, and we put the less important direction second. There's a grammatical change on 28.15. It's not instructional purposes, but purpose. We've cleaned up cross-references. We also try to divide the law so it conceptually held together better. So on page 29.22, we divided up a subdivision into two parts and created a subdivision 1A so that conceptually the ideas which are related to each other but distinct could stand apart. At the very end, if you look on page 31, because these are changes that the reviser and staff are recommending, this is an acknowledgement that any other changes that the legislature might adopt pertaining to charter schools would be incorporated, and there would be no possibility that any substantive changes the legislature wanted to make would in any way be affected by the existence of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And in the audience, we have Kevin Burr and Jason Kenley, who both worked on this. Thank you very much, gentlemen. It was very good to have you spend so much time going through this to make this applicable to our new coding and to make it correct to the extent we're possible, we're capable of doing that, and the possibility that this will endure for another 25 years, but in better form. Are there questions from, yes, Representative Wills?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the very concise walkthrough, and just had a couple of quick questions. On page 18, when you mentioned, it's line 18.21, where it's switching from department to commissioner. Ms. Larson mentioned that in almost all cases, the commissioner is the one performing the action. And I was curious if it's almost all cases, in cases where it would be the department, is that clearly outlined in other areas? And would that make it?
Ms. Wills, Representative Wills, are you on the delete all or are you on the original?
The original.
Yeah, we're working from the delete all.
Okay, I apologize. Well,
but I think you could answer that anyway.
Yeah.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Wills, the commissioner, the department is implicated when the commissioner is directed to act because, of course, the commissioner is the head of the department, but he or she cannot act alone. So if the direction goes to the commissioner, by default it also goes to the department. This is just to be consistent throughout the bill, because if it were to say commissioner and department and the language were not absolutely deliberate in either in each case to say department or commissioner, there might be confusion. So if we say commissioner across the board, then it's clear that the charge goes to the commissioner and by extension to the department, and we're not making any substantive distinction between the two entities.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Larson. That helps clear it up for me. And then also, in multiple locations, you were referencing how you added in what a cross-reference was about the subject, such as on page 25. Sorry, I'm working off the original, but it's just an example where at the bottom of the page it says that subdivision 6 governing transporting non-resident pupils. And just, I'm not clear, is that common practice to include a brief something to help explain what the cross-reference is, because I don't remember ever seeing that before in other statute.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Wills, sadly, no. If it were possible to go through the laws and indicate what those cross-references are, I think it would make the laws more accessible. We don't often have the chance to take a body of law and try to make it consistent and accessible. But since we had the opportunity, we did it. And hopefully in the future, we could make a practice of identifying what cross-references are. It's not standard practice, but it might be helpful.
Thank you,
thank
Madam
you, Representative
Chair.
Wills. That was a really good
one
question.
One quick comment on
please.
That. Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Larson. I appreciate that you did that because I think it's very, very helpful. And and it stands out, and I agree that hopefully in the future we can be doing that in other areas where we have the opportunity to help the public be able to understand this, and us as legislators as we're working through the statutes. Thank you.
Are there further questions or comments? Representative Mariani.
Just a couple things very quickly. So because we are going to act on this next week, I just want to make sure we're all acting at that point, having gone through the information today that we're going to act on tomorrow. So Ms. Larson did walk through the 3204, and the way she did it was not because there's no substance change here in terms of what's the word, in terms of policy substance change. The way she did it was to be to illustrate what was happening here, right?
And correct.
So the delete all. So I just want to say this for the record. So the delete all just repeats that. That the delete all is again not about a policy substantive change. It is about stylistic changes, for lack of a better term. So I just want to say that because, Madam Chair, you're going to be acting on the delete all next week.
And that's correct.
And I don't want anyone to say, well, you know, we didn't walk through the delete all. The point is that this is an exercise in stylistic changes to statutory language. And then the other thing I want to say is that, Madam Chair, it appears to me that between Representative Wells and Representative Russo and Lisa Larson, we're going to have the cleanest statutes.
I love it. We have active verbs now instead of passive verbs. It's so fantastic. Yes, I was excited. Thank you, revisers, Stu, because you worked on that. Yes, so members, on Tuesday, then this file will be officially placed on the record with the delete all as our instrument to move forward in the process. Thank you very much again, Ms. Larson, for all your work, and sorry about the uprising we had last night when we discovered that both Senator Wicker and I didn't know what we were doing. Well, we did. We just thought we received the correct file. And Ms. Fraser, we have walked through your bill, but we can't act on it today because it was not officially posted in time. So thank you for coming. With that, members, we will continue our business. I would really appreciate it if you would take everything you received today for 3204 and put it back in the green file. There's no need for us to run all of this again. And do likewise with 2778. And Representative Variani, do you know if Representative Slocum does not want 597 brought forward ever, or is it because she's absent?
I don't know that. I know that she intentionally pulled it off today, but I don't know what her long-term intent is.
Well, members, let's keep 597 in our folders as well. So basically, everything is returned to the folder for today's meeting to help our pages. And the only thing that we can recycle, or the only thing we should recycle, is 2511. Excuse me? And Representative Seltzer.
Oh, Madam Chair, there are a couple of us who don't have Representative Slocum's bill. I was wondering if
nobody did. Guess it was pulled, except for the chair. She always goes through everything ahead of time, and so I do my own folder. Okay, so I apologize. Yes, don't worry about that. If Representative Slocum decides to bring that forward, we'll make sure it's posted. With that, members, have a glorious weekend. Be refreshed because for us, next week will be tough.
Yep.
So plan on Tuesday, day and night, and Thursday, day and night, and I'm sure Friday, maybe from 9 to 12 or something like that, which is pretty much our tradition, Representative Mariani, as I recall from the past. Thank you, and have a great break. The meeting is adjourned.